Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, February the 6th. And, you know, it is amazing around here. Last Monday, we were at in the first of what would be 4 days of pretty serious ice storms that pretty much shut down the city for four consecutive days. And here today we have 70, I'm looking at it right now, 70 degrees right now. In Dallas, Texas, and sunshine, and you know, it looks like a spring day out there, and I guess that's what happens in Texas. You know, the temperature will change like this. There's a little saying out there saying that something like, if you don't like the weather in Texas, just wait 20 minutes, and you'll get something. You'll get something different. Well, today we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill's going to be checking us with us in a few minutes. He's running a little late, but we're going to talk about, you know, what a crazy time we're living in. 2 weeks ago, it was all about the documents and the Corvette. And here this week, we're talking about a balloon, a Chinese balloon that was flying across the United States. I mean, what an amazing turnaround or turn of events, but it just seems like every week there's something exciting going on with the Biden administration. And I don't know if it's just because we're living in interesting times or maybe we have more news coverage than ever before, but it's just unbelievable. I've never seen anything like this where, you know, the topics will change so dramatically, and things that were not even in the radar a week ago, all of a sudden we're talking about those things. As I mentioned, we're waiting for our friend Bill Katz from New York to check in, and I'm going to ask Bill, as we always do, to give us a little report of what's happening in New York with the mayor, who's under a lot of pressure, really, under a lot of political pressure for what's happening with the migrants. The story, it's very interesting because they moved the migrants from the hotels. They put them in some kind of a location in Brooklyn, I believe. And these migrants at the moment are, I guess they're sleeping there. It's kind of a big mass facility. It's not a hotel, obviously. So they're kind of all sleeping there's like a big floor, and I guess they're all sleeping on there. I mean, it's clean. It's clean. It's I'm sure the heaters are working fine, and everything is working fine. But it's, again, not the hotel where they were staying before. So what we're going to do is, now these migrants, a lot of them are protesting, and in fact, several of them have decided to move up to Canada. They took a bus, and I believe the city of New York is paying for the bus. Now, it's not a very long ride from New York to Montreal or wherever they're gonna take them. I mean, New York is, of course, just across the lake from Canada, so I'm not exactly sure where they're going to take them. I'm not exactly sure what they did in Canada to bring these people over, or what they agreed to do in Canada to bring these people over to Canada. But they are on their way to Canada. Some of them, at least one bus, So that, you know, a bus would be what, about maybe 100 people? So there's a lot more. There's a lot more, obviously, who are going to be, who are either going to be staying reluctantly in New York. But again, all of this is the consequence of not having a policy that frankly makes any sense. You know, when you have a policy, we spoke about this last week as well. You've got the northern border with Canada. There are people walking in. You know, they've seen more and more people walking in. Of course, you got this situation down here on the southern border, and it's just a big mess. And this is what we're seeing is, this is what happens when you have, frankly, a border that, when you don't have a border, let me just put it that way. When you don't have a border, this is what you have. You have a situation like this. Let me do this. Let me take a little break, and we're going to try to see, we'll try to connect with Bill. He may be having some phone problems or some technical problems there in New York. So we're going to check with Bill, and we will be right back with, hopefully with an opportunity to chat with our friend Bill Katz, as we always like to do. So let me take a little break, and we will be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, having a little difficulty connecting with our friend Bill Katz up in New York. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to run over some of the issues that we were going to talk to with Bill about today. And, you know, hang in there for a few more minutes. We may just have to reschedule the whole thing, which you know, we may just have to. There could be sometimes these are technical problems that people have, and we may just have to reschedule the whole thing maybe for another day this week. But one of the things that I wanted to talk to Bill about is the fact that there's a State of the Union tomorrow night, and this Chinese balloon has sort of, let's just say, has upset a little bit the plans for the State of the Union. And so what exactly President Biden is going to say? Well, I think he's going to talk a great deal about the economy, obviously, and how great the economy is doing. So he'll be talking a lot about that. But, you know, this economic information is confusing to a lot of people, because while there was a good jobs report on Friday, that cannot be denied, and we had 2.9% growth, I think, in the last quarter, which is not a bad number. You have to begin to wonder whether those are people, all that, you know, 500,000 jobs or whatever, you have to wonder if those are people who are coming back to work from COVID, because roughly we now have the same unemployment rate that we had before COVID. And so you have to begin to wonder, you know, are these people coming back? Many of these benefits that these people had these benefits that they were given, you know, to stay home or whatever, many of these benefits have dried up. Now, some states have been continuing these benefits, but for the most part, they've been drying up. So if you were staying at home, let's say, over the last year or so because of this, then all of a sudden, obviously, you don't have a paycheck or money coming in or whatever, so you got to go out and work. And many economists are looking at the jobs number, and they're saying this is more a consequence of people going out to work rather than necessarily new jobs being created. Now, maybe it's the same thing, and I'm not trying to downplay the jobs report, because I always like it when the jobs report is good. But at the same time, you know, let's look, as they like to say in baseball, let's look inside the numbers. But he'll be talking, of course, about the jobs report, no question about it. And he'll be trying to see what, you know, what he can somehow, what credit he can get for the jobs report, and he'll probably get some. But then this Chinese balloon has sort of kind of spoiled the party in a way, because we were all waiting, you know, obviously this is not something that they were planning, and so, you know, he's going to have to address it. And there are a lot of questions about the balloon, lots and lots of questions about the balloon and what does it mean and what exactly does that balloon mean. I think we got our friend Bill Katz. Bill, were you looking at the balloon? Is that what happened to you?
No, by remarkably good coincidence, we had a power outage.
Oh, okay. That's always a lot of fun.
Well, yes, we lost the internet, TV, and telephone, but we're back.
Well, that's great. I'm delighted that you're back, because that means we got you.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just as you came in, I was saying that the big news of the week, of course, is going to be the State of the Union. But
yes.
I wanted to go back and sort of go back to what I had said at the very beginning, that I have not seen 2 weeks of political coverage like this. 2 weeks ago, it was the documents. Now, or a week ago, it was the documents. And now we're talking about a Chinese balloon. What are we going to talk about next Monday, Bill?
Well, probably the Kamala Harris balloon.
Yes, right.
You may have read today. Actually, it's not really a news story. It's kind of a composite story that Fox is running, that the Democratic Party has had it with Kamala Harris, and I can understand that. No matter what the event, no matter what the drama, she's not there. And they've given her plenty of opportunities. Apparently, they like her husband very much. Maybe he could just take over or do something. But they are really concerned that her presence on the ticket will severely damage the Democratic Party's chances of being elected. Because if Biden is the nominee, he has to have her. I mean, look, he can't fire her. He can't fire her legally, but also politically, she's a woman of color. In today's world, you can't do that. If she insists on being on the ticket, people will say Biden is this ancient president. The statistical chances of him living through a second term are not high. And do we really want that as president, with Kamala Harris? And it could destroy his chances for a second term. I don't honestly know what a party does in a situation like this.
Right.
It's the cost of identity politics.
Right.
We did have in 1944 a remarkably similar situation, although we were in the middle of World War II, which certainly is not similar to anything today, but you had a vice president, Henry Wallace. It was the end of President Roosevelt's third term. No one had ever been elected before him to even two terms, and he was about to run for his fourth term, and he was in terrible physical shape. That was not announced to the public. In those days, the press did not talk about the president's health in public. It was considered inappropriate, and the tradition was very heavily protected. But anyone looking at him, as it was often pointed out, knew he was dying. He was ashen, and that the person in the vice presidential slot would become the next president of the United States. Well, here he was preparing for his fourth run for the presidency, and who does he have as vice president but a man named Henry Wallace, a very fine man and respected man, but a man very far to the left. He was in Bernie Sanders territory, or even more to the left. And it was 1944, and the elders of the Democratic Party believed, as patriots, that he should never be president. And they had to replace him on the ticket, and they replaced him with a man named Harry Truman. It was quite high drama. Think of that. In the middle of a war, the largest war in human history, President Roosevelt, as the leader of the victorious army, the army that was about to be victorious. The election was held, after all, in November of 1944, and the war was over in less than a year. And they They had to. I don't know exactly what the mechanism was. There was no legal mechanism. Informally, I believe it is understood that Roosevelt realized what was happening, understood Wallace couldn't be president, and left it up to the heads of Congress and the Democratic Party to pick the nominee. In those days, the party bosses really did have that kind of power, and I think they used it very responsibly. They picked Harry Truman, who did become president within just months of President Roosevelt's fourth inauguration. President Roosevelt was inaugurated for his fourth term on January 20th, 1944, and lived only until April 12th, 1945, and lived only until April 12th. So he lived only through a few months of his presidency, and Harry Truman became president.
Truman almost served two terms in terms of time, not legally. But, I mean, he almost served two terms. I mean, almost 99% of FDR's term and then his own term. But you raise – it's a great story about Wallace in 44 and Truman, because I believe and I don't know the interior of the Democrat Party, but I don't think they could do that today. In other words, I don't think you could actually have a bunch of men – and that's what it was back then – sit around a room with cigars or whatever they used to say, cigar full room, full of smoke or whatever, and say, it's in the best interest of the party to get him out and put him in. That kind of a conversation or that kind of a decision, Bill, I don't think this party today could make. I mean, look, they forced him to take Kamala Harris. I don't think that was his choice, really.
They also forced him to revise the primary schedule, which was just announced a few days ago, to put South Carolina first.
So there's obviously, he's reacting to what is going on in his party. But Bill, just very quickly, I wanted to mention this, because today, February the 6th, a couple of the real personalities of the last 100 years, Babe Ruth and Ronald Reagan. Obviously, they're both passed away, but they celebrate. We remember their date of birth today, Ruth in 1895 and Reagan 1911. And I would always argue, Bill, that these two men, when Ruth became, after the White Sox scandal in the 1920s, it was Babe Ruth really who brought back baseball as far as as a business. There was always baseball, but the game was in decline. Fans were unhappy. They were not going to the game. And it took a guy like Ruth to put people in the seats, as they like to say. And I would argue that in the case of Reagan, obviously not baseball or something more serious because it was the country, but it was Reagan who basically brought the country back. So I think these two men in their own way share that, that story in their lives that they – brought back one baseball and the other one our country, Bill.
The country. I fully agree with you. It's an interesting comparison, and I haven't heard it made before. That's original. Yes, very much so. Yankee Stadium was called the house that Ruth built because he was such a star that people would come to the stadium to see Babe Ruth. And he was a great personality. And yes, he almost single-handedly brought back baseball. Which has had several revivals. And Ronald Reagan, I recall when Ronald Reagan was elected, it was really considered something of a miracle because had been a movie actor, and you could almost compare it to a good suspense movie. He arrived just in time because the country was descending in morale. It was becoming a sad country. We had in the White House a pathetic president named Jimmy Carter, who had no leadership abilities at all. And there appeared this man named Ronald Reagan. The press was against him. Members of his own party were against him. In the 1980 Republican convention, the party establishment tried to force him to take former President Gerald Ford as his vice presidential candidate because they felt that the public would never accept him, would never accept Reagan, that he was too far to the right, that he was a warmed-over movie actor, and that with Ford on the ticket, they could call it a co-presidency. Well, that was laughable. There's no such thing as a co-presidency. Reagan turned it down. He picked George Bush, which was not a great choice, but at least it was an acceptable choice, and then went on to run a campaign – where he was a direct contrast to the man of the White House, Jimmy Carter, and the point has been made a number of times, it isn't original with me, was that they had a debate. The American people saw their president, Jimmy Carter, and then the camera panned to the other side of the stage, and they saw a real president, Ronald Reagan, who won by a substantial amount, even in a campaign where at the beginning too many people thought he would win at all. And yes, he did. He did. His greatest contribution to America as president was to restore the national morale. National morale is very important in a democracy. It really is. If you don't have the people behind you, if there's no enthusiasm, you're not going to get anything done, and the country could genuinely suffer. But he did bring back the national morale, just as Babe Ruth brought back morale to baseball.
Right.
I think we are in one of those moments today. The national morale is very low. We have just observed a Chinese reconnaissance balloon going across the continental United States, and they waited until the last minute to shoot it down. The American people are looking and saying, is this the great United States, the powerful United States? And I think that every public opinion poll, as you know, Silvio, shows that the Democratic Party doesn't even want Biden to run again.
Right.
And more Republicans don't want Donald Trump to run again. They want a new leader. They want a Reagan.
That's right. No, I think you're right. I think that a lot, you know, although I am beginning to think that Trump may be the nominee, because, Bill, I think the issues are moving in his direction in the sense that, you know, he won't be, you know, he'll have issues in September or October when the campaign starts. We could be talking about the economy, talking about this thing with a balloon, you know, the border, and all these other issues about the FBI and the investigations of, you know, the stuff with Twitter and stuff like that. A lot of that stuff, I think, works for Reagan. But, you know, you never know. You just don't know what's going to happen in a few months. But the one thing I do know, and there's a great post today over at the Powerline. I would recommend it, Powerline blog, one of my favorite blogs, just an absolutely great blog. And I don't remember which one of the three guys wrote it, but he was saying that he feels that it's the Democrat Party that is going to be in disarray in 2024 for some of the reasons that you stated about Kamala Harris and her balloon popping, and Joe Biden, you know, many Democrats don't want him. So let's just play a little speculation, Bill. Let's say that come this summer, Biden is not running. There's a lot of concern about Vice President Harris. Who runs? I mean, where do they get their candidate from? Newsom from California, maybe. But, I mean, I'm not sure he would play that well outside of blue states. I mean, he's not I don't think he's the candidate. I think they're the ones who are in a bit of a mess, not the Republicans. The Republicans will have problems, of course. But I think the Democrats, like you indicated with Kamala Harris, could have some really big problems, Bill.
They could. The Republican bench is very deep. It's very, very deep. It begins with, of course, Ron DeSantis, who gets more and more popular. It has Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia, who flipped Virginia. It has Governor Reynolds of Iowa, who's kind of a dark horse, but is extremely popular and is doing the right things as governor. It has Governor Abbott of Texas. It goes on and on. Great talent. The Democratic Party is not so endowed right now. If Biden does not run, and I think it's still a distinct possibility, if he does not run, the first decision will have to be that of Kamala Harris. Does she run? Now, she may say, I deserve this. You know, I'm next in line. And the wing of the Democratic Party who cares about identity politics will tell her, you have to run, and we will support you. The party will then have an enormous problem. Who will run against a woman of color for the Democratic nomination? And I can't think of any who has such stature that it could be done easily. I really can't think of one person. I think they would almost have to give it to her by default, unless a group of party elders, and it would have to be a multiracial group, comes out and makes a statement saying, anybody who wants to run should run. The American people should have a choice. Our party should have a choice. I don't know how effective that would be. I think it might be effective. It also might be effective if Biden doesn't run. If Kamala Harris were approached by a committee saying, look, Madam Vice President, it's our judgment you cannot win the election. And maybe it would be best to withdraw. If Biden withdraws, maybe you might say that, well, I'm withdrawing because I think a whole new team should be in place. It's best for the country. And you go out on a high note. I don't know what would work. As you have pointed out, we've never had this before.
Right. No, we never have. I don't recall anything like this before. In that Powerline article, they were talking about 1968, but that was, of course, when LBJ decided not to run.
Right.
But that, to me, is very different from the situation now, Bill, in one sense. This morning, I was listening to Hugh Hewitt, and he said that the American people have never seen an 81-year-old man address them on the State of the Union. I think that Biden,
yes,
they're going to do their best to, you know, obviously make him look very dynamic and all of that, but it's going to have him for 30 or 40 minutes talking, you're going to start to see him get tired. It's normal. I mean, look, I'm not knocking the guy. I think a lot of 80-year-olds would have that problem too. And I think that's the man the country is going to see, so it may not be a good idea for a lot of applauding. You know, they need to get that speech over as soon as possible, Bill.
Right, right. Well, you know, under law, he doesn't have to give it. He can send it over to the Congress, but by tradition, it has now become an in-person event and a major event. I don't like State of the Union messages. I often don't watch them. I read them because I think I can study more about what the president really has in mind if you just read the speech. But I think it could be a bad moment, even if it's a good moment for Biden. A good moment for Biden isn't that great. He is obviously elderly. He is obviously in some way impaired. You don't have to have a doctor's note. And there he will be tomorrow giving the State of the Union, and not at a great time. He will tout, we already know this, he will tout his economic accomplishments, but most Americans don't feel them. You know, he said, well, look at all these new jobs that are being created. Well, I want to know where they're being created and what kind of jobs they are. And he's saying, well, look, inflation is slowing. Well, inflation is slowing. That's like saying to a fellow who's been knifed 20 times, the blood flow is slowing down. Less blood is coming out. The fact of the matter is that the inflation has already rendered such damage to people that they're not going to be too pleased by the announcement that the inflation is slowing. And then,
right,
of course, we just had this humiliating incident involving the
Let me do this, Bill. Let me take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about that balloon incident.
Sure.
And I have something I wanted to add about the inflation figure, and then I want to talk about what's happening in New York, where the situation with the migrants just seems to get more interesting every week. Now, I guess some of they're going up to Canada. So let's take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill Katz right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I wanted to say something about the inflation that many of the – a lot of the news is not addressing this issue or this angle, if I may put it that way, of the inflation figure, and that's the gasoline prices. It doesn't really matter. Well, I guess it does matter, but what I'm saying is the driving factor behind inflation, we saw this – under President Carter in 1980, is the price of gasoline. Around here, the price of gasoline was about $2.89, $2.90 not long ago. Now it's up to $3.19. And if it's at 319 in Texas, I God only knows what it is everywhere else. And that, I think, that little increase in gasoline of 15, 20 cents, and they're saying it could be higher, that alone is a bigger inflation factor than just about anything else. I also saw a story. This is a little humorous, but it's a sign of the times. People are now bringing eggs from Mexico because the eggs are so expensive.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it sounds kind of funny, but it's sad, Bill.
Well, it is very sad. The situation in the country is people feel there's a next step to be made, that we have to, you know, President Kennedy, when he ran for office in 1960, said we've got to get this country moving again. I think we're in one of those movements, one of those moments that people are saying we've got to get this country moving again, and we really don't have the leadership for it. I mean, during this entire episode with the Chinese balloon, which was a serious episode, we didn't know what was on that balloon. And we still don't until it's analyzed, is that the president didn't address the nation once. The people were interested. They were following it. And I think there is a feeling that we are leaderless and we could have a catastrophic moment in foreign policy and that there has to be some kind of change. I agree with everything you're saying. It's very hard to chart a clear future. You know, in 1968, when Lyndon Johnson pulled out, and you made a reference to that, but he pulled out at the beginning of the year, I will not serve as your president. There was a vice president who was at least respectable, Hubert Humphrey, who did get the nomination. In a year that was traumatic for the American people, Dr. King was assassinated, and then Robert Kennedy, who would have gotten the nomination had he lived, was also assassinated. It was a very traumatic year. But we lived through it. We elected, basically a retread in Richard Nixon, but at least he was a knowledgeable retread. The situation is different. What we're talking about right now in this country, and we've talked about it on this program before, is we have institutional failure. The American people really don't trust their institutions anymore, and that includes even the military, which is down in prestige, and even the FBI. We haven't seen before. We really haven't, since the Great Depression, we had a kind of similar distrust of institutions.
Yes, no, I agree with you. And I think let's talk about the balloon because I believe, did I lose you, Bill? Are you there?
No, here I am.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought for a minute there I had lost you, but good. I thought maybe the lights went out again. But let's talk about the balloon because there's a story in the Dallas Morning News today, and the headline was "More Questions Than Answers" about the balloon.
Oh, yes.
And that's kind of how I feel. They knew about this balloon before, when it was in the ocean in the Pacific heading toward Alaska. So they had plenty of time to call the Chinese government and say, look, what is that? Where are you going? And they could have told them right there, look, as soon as that balloon gets in our 12 miles of, national waters, within our territorial waters, we're going to shoot it down if you don't call it back. So they could have done this, whenever it was, a week ago. They let it go in. It flies all over Canada. It, by coincidence, goes to places where we have military bases. I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
And then, of course, it flies
across the country, and then they tell us, well, we didn't want to shoot it down because, we didn't want to have damage to the people below. Well, it is apparently three school buses long, so it's not Sputnik.
That's the balloon.
The balloon
is not heavy and wouldn't have caused any damage to civilians below, but it's the payload underneath. Which is what they're looking for, and it's now at the bottom of the water, and it's just the beginning of the ocean. Apparently, it's 47 feet down. They'll recover that, but had they shot the thing down over Montana, they would have just gone around picking up the pieces. And
it would have been crashing into a schoolhouse or something.
Yes,
but it should have never gotten to Montana in the first place. That's my view.
That's
it should have been shot down before it entered Alaska. That's what I think. And then at that point, they could have said, okay, well, we're going to, you know, we're going to, you know, we're going to send you a message that you don't do that. Now, what exactly was the Chinese motive? That's another question. Were they just testing our air defenses? Were they trying to see how far they could push Joe Biden, President Biden? I mean, I don't know. I cannot read their minds, but I don't like the way we came across in this deal, Bill.
Yes, you're right. I think we came across as rather naive. You are quite right in saying that it, by some strange coincidence, passed over some of our most sensitive military bases, and yet we are told it was a balloon that got lost in the wind, and the winds went in the wrong direction, and we don't know what happened to the Chinese. It began to sound like a Jackie Mason routine. We never heard of it. I mean, what balloon are you talking about? It passed over the missile bases in North Dakota, which are among our most critical and most sensitive. It then went south and passed over Whiteman Air Force Base, Missouri, which is where the B-2s are located. It seemed to have hit a lot of hot spots. We can only assume that in some way the balloon was being controlled. And I'm making that assumption. I'm not an expert on balloon technology, but it's too much of a coincidence to think
right.
that it went over all those sensitive bases. They said the Chinese made the claim that it was a weather balloon, but it was pointed out that weather balloons are only about 20 feet across. This was the length, as you pointed out, of three school buses. Apparently it has happened before that they've either come close to the American mainland. I don't know what was in their minds. Maybe, you know, one of the things, the worst things you can do is to overestimate an enemy. You can underestimating is more dangerous, but overestimating, this may have been in their mind just a routine flight that went bad. And I'm sure it had sensitive equipment on board, not just weather equipment. And that just may have been the way they thought about it when they launched it. Well, we've launched a lot
right.
of these before. We've always had good luck. Why not now? Or it could have been done very intentionally, as I pointed out, with control. And it could have been that they needed a certain amount of information gathered from a close-in camera, and 60,000 feet is considered close-in. Or they were testing us to see what our reaction would be, how would we react as a nation, and that they could repair any diplomatic damage. But I think this is all speculation. I think it's very important to get the materials back to Quantico, to the FBI lab, and they will be analyzed. They should know enough from even wrecked wreckage, because they do it with air crashes, to make some determination as to what the stuff was. Whether the public announcements will be honest or cover-ups, I don't know. This administration hasn't been very transparent.
No. No, not at all. Let's go back to the documents for another example of that. But Senator Marco Rubio, who, by the way, he's more and more impressive as a foreign
yes.
policy guy. He's really, you know, he's really gaining in that position as a foreign policy senator. But he said something in one of the Sunday shows. He feels that they were trying to send a message to the world that the United States is the past and China is the future. He didn't exactly use those words, but that's what he meant. That China was, you know, that the United States is like an old superpower, you know, going down, and China is the future. And if that was the message, Bill, I think they succeeded, because we looked awfully weak in how we responded. You know, I don't know. This would have never happened under President Trump. I mean, they may have tried it, but there's no way that President Trump would have willingly allowed and I'm not just boosting Trump. I would say the same thing about George W. Bush or
yes.
any other president. This would have never happened. They would have shut it down out in the ocean, Bill.
Yes. Well, they claim that it was only detected as it was approaching the Alaskan coast. Well, okay, fair enough, but it was detected, and Alaska has many desolate areas. They could have shot it down over any one of those. And there might have been a risk to some civilians. Look, life is filled with risks, And, you know, you see something like, you don't know what it is. You don't know what it is carrying. It could even have been carrying a nuclear device that would set to explode over the United States and create what's known as an EMP wave, electromagnetic radiation wave, electromagnetic something, EMP. I don't know what the P stands for. But that would have knocked out our electrical grid by the radio waves. That has been something we feared for years. It's been in the press for years, since the early 1990s. It should have been shot down immediately. We should have shown great determination that you must not enter our airspace without permission, and that's that. And you know, and that should have simply been the message. Here we were just, you know, watching it, and the president didn't address the country. He went on a trip. The vice president, as usual, was nowhere to be seen. Pathetic individual, and they did expose the country as kind of asleep. You know, there is the famous story, the famous book about Pearl Harbor, called "At Dawn We Slept," because we were so unprepared and it became such a shock. Well, here we might write a book saying, "Throughout a decade we slept," and I'm afraid that's true, because this incident involving the Chinese balloon has generated, as you know, a number of news stories about how unprepared we are generally to fight a mm-hmm. conflict. We only have a few weeks of military stockpile in terms of ammunition, because we've given so much to Ukraine. We need replacements for many of our weapon systems. Our servicing of aircraft is slow, much slower than would be required. And I'm glad these stories are being written. They probably are being read very much in Beijing, and it's probably confirming what many people feel is their impression of us as a nation of the past. So, sure. Right.
Well, I would have expected the president, I don't care of what party, I would have expected the president to shoot it down way, you know, before it hit the mainland, and then address the nation and say, look what I did today.
Yes.
This Chinese balloon was headed in our direction. We were not going to allow that. So I took it down. And congratulations to the servicemen or the aviators for doing it. And but the message goes out. You're not going to violate our airspace. That's what I think any president would have done, or that I would have expected him to do. But here, you know, it's, we're going to get to it. We're going to get to it. I mean, he looked bad. I just don't know how else to say it. And I obviously, I am a partisan person. I don't like him. But I still, you know, at times like this, I want to support the president, because he is the president at a time like this. And he looked so bad, Bill. He looked terrible in this whole incident. I can't remember the last time that anybody looked this bad. Maybe it was when, again, going back to President Carter, when the Soviets went into – remember when the Soviets went into Afghanistan and President Carter said something along the lines of, gee, I've learned more about the Soviets this week than in all my life. Really, Mr. President?
Yes.
Now you've learned it? So I just remember that from, because he looked so weak back then. Bill, let me, since we had a little shorter time today, I want to get to the story of New York and the migrants. As I understand, the migrants were in a hotel and they were moved to a place in Brooklyn, and some of them didn't want to go, but I guess most of them did go. And even the mayor stayed with them, I guess, last night to prove solidarity, I guess. And then some of them are taking buses to Canada. Is that about what's going on, Bill?
That is. You know, what that raises, that the point you just made, that they have expressed disapproval with their quarters in New York. They have expressed disapproval of the food they're given. You know, the image of an illegal migrant is some poor guy and poor lady who is just desperate and looking for a new country. But more and more we're learning that a lot of these migrants are intelligent. They make their own decisions. Some of them even speak English. I'm becoming uneasy that we're getting a lot of people in this country with very definite ambitions, and they're not necessarily pro-ambitions. You know, it was pointed out by someone, we haven't seen one example of a migrant cross the border and engage in the traditional practice of falling to his knees and kissing the ground. They come as if they feel they're entitled to this and that they will dictate the kind of life they want. Yes, they came to New York. They were put up in luxury hotels in the theater district. I don't know if they were given tickets. I think if they were given tickets, they would have wanted to pick the row. You want the right row, or you want orchestra level seats. But now
Bill, they would have complained if they had gotten Broadway tickets. They would have complained, saying, "We want to see the Yankees."
That's right. That's right. But they are running all over the theater district, and now they want to go to Canada, where they feel they will get a better deal. And yes, it is true that the mayor, Mayor Adams, slept at one of the shelters last night to show solidarity. But a lot of even New Yorkers, who politically are not the smartest people in the world, are saying, what is going on here? This is a city already in great distress with a rising crime rate, with a situation where New York is the largest out-migration state in the country. More people are leaving. The second largest. I think California may be the largest. But people are leaving in droves. And here is the mayor showing solidarity with people who are here illegally. And, yes, I think that there's just a growing dismay. Is this the best we can do?
Right. And there's a story that came out today, and I sent you a copy of this, where now the residents of New York are complaining, saying, hey, wait a minute,
yes,
you know, why not take care of us? And talking about balloons, it really punctures one balloon, and that is the great hypocrisy of the Democrat Party with immigration.
Oh, sure.
Because can remember many a time, Bill, debating sanctuary cities with Democrats down here. And they would say, well, you know, sanctuary cities, we have to be humanitarian. Of course, they never got their chance to be humanitarian because Texas Governor Abbott vetoed or signed a law saying that sanctuary cities would not be allowed in Texas. Or he signed something that came from the legislature, I mean.
Yes.
And so we never tested their humanity in Texas, but we're testing it in New York. And we're testing it in other places. And many of these Democrat cities are humanitarian in the abstract. But when they actually have to show their humanity, they're not. And, you know, and all you got to do is look at the reaction of the local people toward these migrants. If I was one of these migrants, I would feel cheated because I do think, Bill, that they were misled and told, come to the United States and you're going to have all these things. And they were being misled by the Biden administration. I put it right at the White House, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I think the Biden administration and the left wing of the Democratic Party see these migrants as future Democratic voters. And they, you know, that to them is everything. The party is everything. The politics is everything. But these cities that named themselves sanctuary cities, yes, this was incredible virtue signaling. We are a sanctuary city. We are humanitarian. We are better than these other people. Now they found out what it actually means to be a sanctuary city. And it turns your city into a wreckage. And there is anger. People are not yet rioting in the streets about it, but there is great anger. I don't know if Mayor Adams could be reelected today. He has been very much a disappointment through this. He often says the right thing and then doesn't have the power or the interest in doing anything. It should be pointed out also that in the midst of all this here in New York, it has now been learned that New York City has adopted a policy,
yes,
of requiring its new employees to be taught critical race theory. I think this is the last straw. I mean, it's a big story here in New York today that the administration, whether the mayor favors it or not, is going the way of the far left.
Right. And this is a post that you have at Urgent Agenda today, and I wanted,
yes,
to bring this up. I'm glad you mentioned it because I was gonna bring it up. But, yeah, I mean, that is insane for a city to do something like that. But one more thing I wanted to mention, and it's on Urgent Agenda today. You mentioned it also, Bill, and that is a number of young people who are relying on their parents to pay their bills. And, you know, we were talking before about the economy and how great the economy is. Well, look, I have the great fortune that our three sons are independent economically, and that's because, you know, they're great sons. and they were educated, and they've always known that they had to take care of themselves. It's a family tradition that we have. But, you know, a lot of these young people having to rely on their parents, that tells me they're not getting jobs. So that tells me that there's an economic problem with many of these young people, Bill. So, I mean, look, I understand you want to help your family. That's one thing. But this goes beyond that, Bill. I think the article that you posted goes beyond helping your family. It goes into dependency, Bill.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, you have a young, miseducated generation. We talk about woke schools and left-wing educators, and when we talk about it, we ought to talk about it in very practical terms. These people have apparently been here and running schools and running school systems for longer than we thought, at least since the 1980s, and we have a young generation that is educated in those in that mentality. They seem to think that as a generation that they are entitled, that they are entitled to a great deal, that they shouldn't have to work because they don't like the jobs. We have this also concurrent phenomenon in the United States of people simply not wanting to go back to work. And you put the two together, that and the fact that people in their 30s are still living with parents who are paying their bills, it's a very, very depressing situation.
It is. It is. And it's certainly not the signs of a strong economy. It's also not a sign of a healthy society, because I think that financial independence is extremely important. There comes, I mean, you obviously you help your kids as much as you can. They grow up with you, but at some point they have to go out on their own. And that's what troubles me. Well, Bill, I want to thank you for your time today, and I'm sorry about the technical problems at the beginning, but we'll just have to make it up next week. And you know, I don't know what to say, but once upon a time, Bill, I wanted to say this, that once upon a time, when I thought of a balloon, I thought of something fun. Like that great
yes.
song by the, you know, Up, Up and Away and My
up,
Beautiful
up
Balloon.
Up and Away and My Beautiful
yes.
Balloon, yes.
Or I remember there was a song back in high school, there was a song about a yellow balloon in a rainy afternoon or something like that.
Right.
But now all of a sudden, balloons have become politicized, and what a shame that is, Bill.
Well, it is, and I think that what shocked so many people is they thought, as you did, a balloon is something that involves fun. The idea that it could be used as a military weapon, I think, was the furthest thing from their mind, and we have to sort it out.
That's right. No, you're right. And I think, you know, a lot of people had the reaction I did. You know, it's like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I knew that balloons had been used as military weapons for reconnaissance, I guess, before.
Oh,
but
yes.
The idea of a balloon flying across the United States and a balloon from China, that shook me up. I have to admit, that shook me up a little bit. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens this week. We'll talk about the State of the Union next week, Bill.
Absolutely.
And you have a wonderful week. And as always, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Sorry about the outage.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Thank you so much. Well, our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking about balloons, talking about a lot of things today. And, you know, a couple weeks ago it was documents. Today it's balloons. God only knows what it will be next week. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and thank you for your time.